There is a series of events in the life of Jesus Christ in which the synoptic writers are in virtual lockstep with each other. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all give the same events in the same order, with one minor exception, in that Luke leaves out one aspect of these events. But the very fact that you have in all three of the synoptic gospels this same series of events indicates, I think, the importance of those events. That there's something that should draw our attention to those events and the way that they are brought together. It begins with the confession that Peter makes in Caesarea Philippi, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus praises Peter and blesses him, rather, for the confession that he makes. But then Jesus says that he is going to die. He's going to go up to Jerusalem. There he's going to be arrested. He's going to be killed. And Peter, again, is the one who speaks up and says, "No, that must not happen to you, Lord." And this time Jesus rebukes Peter for having said this. Then, after having said that concerning Peter, he directs his comments more generally so that they deal with us. And we come to that well-known passage that I think is we've probably heard more often by itself than in the context of all these events, where he says to his disciples and to us that if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. About a week later, the next event that is recorded is the transfiguration of Jesus, where his glory is displayed. And you recall that event, but after they had been on the mountain, they come down from the mountain, and the very next thing in all three gospel accounts of the synoptic writers is about the man who has brought his son, who is epileptic, who has a demon, and Jesus' disciples have not been able to cast out the demon, but Jesus does cast out that demon and complains about the unbelief of his disciples. And then he once again tells of the death that is coming. These events all seem to tie together in order to bring out a particular purpose that the writers have, which Jesus would have us to understand as well. And so let's read through this passage in Matthew chapter 16, beginning with verse 13. If you use the Pew Bibles, it begins just a couple of lines down from the top of the first column and will be ending at the very bottom of the final column, that you won't even have to turn the page, as we have all of these events set before us. Matthew chapter 16, beginning with verse 13, on through 17:23. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he warned his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Christ. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world, yet forfeits his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in the Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what he has done. I tell you the truth, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up into a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them. And a voice from the cloud said, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said, "don't be afraid." When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The disciples asked him, "Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" Jesus replied, "To be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things, but I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but have done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." Then the disciples understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist. When they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. "Lord, have mercy on my son," he said. "He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him." "Oh, unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed from that moment. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "Because you have so little faith. I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." When they came together in Galilee, he said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life." And his disciples were filled with grief. May God bless to us the reading of this portion of his word, and may we draw near to him as we learn from it. Do you know where Caesarea Philippi is? It's not in Judea. It's not in Samaria, that land just to the north. It's not in Galilee, which is just to the north of Samaria. But rather, if you would go along the Jordan River from the Dead Sea up, you would come to upstream, you would come to the Sea of Galilee. You go across the Sea of Galilee, continue on upstream, and there's a smaller body of water up there. You go across it and go just a little farther north of it, and then off to the east is where you find the region of Caesarea Philippi. Now remember, Jesus was sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So the question is, why? Why has he gone so far away from the lost sheep of the house of Israel? He's not with them. He's gone up there to Caesarea Philippi, and he's taken his disciples with him. This appears to be a sort of working vacation that he has his disciples going on. He is anticipating his death. And he knows that after his death and resurrection, he will be ascending into heaven. Then what? The disciples will be left behind. And he will be commissioning them to take the gospel into the uttermost parts of the earth. Do they understand the kingdom? Do they understand the program? Do they understand what is actually going to be taking place? This appears then to be an opportunity for him to take his disciples away and say, "Are you with me in this program that is going to continue after I die and rise again from the dead and ascend into heaven?" Of course, they're not yet on board with the whole fact of him dying, let alone ascending into heaven. They're seeing something else. They're expecting something else. But what Jesus seems to be doing here is preparing his disciples to carry the ministry forward while he is in heaven, ruling over all things for his own glory. And so being there where his disciples can call upon him and he can serve their needs as they proclaim the kingdom to the uttermost parts of the earth. Well, first of all, they need to know who he is. Notice he does not ask a leading question. He doesn't say, "Do you believe that I am the Messiah?" That would be a leading question. It's the kind of question that a lawyer is not allowed to ask the witness. He can't say, "Were you at such and such a place on Friday night, and did you see such and such a thing happen?" He can say, "Where were you Friday night? What was going on there? What happened?" Jesus does almost the opposite. Instead of asking them, who do you think I am? Or do you believe that I am the Christ? He says, what's the scuttlebutt around town? Who do people think that I am? And so they come up with a number of different answers, apparently that they have been hearing on the streets of Galilee and Judea. One of the prophets, maybe even Moses, and they give a number of different answers. And after they have given those answers, then he says, "But who do you say that I am?" Now notice what he has done. He has planted in their minds a number of answers to that question. And they have the opportunity to say, is it A, B, C, or D? Or will they recognize that it's none of the above? And what should be placed in there in place of none of the above? If anything, what he has done, he has led them away from the correct answer. And then when they come up with the correct answer, you see it's something that would be coming from the heart. And so Peter's confession is that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. And Jesus gives him a benediction for this answer. He pronounces a benediction on him. "Blessed are you, Peter, because this wasn't something that you just came up with yourself. but it's something that has been revealed to you. You have a great privilege given to you, Peter, to have it revealed to you as to who I am. Everything's fine up to that point. But then he begins to talk about what is going to happen when he goes to Jerusalem. Because when he goes to Jerusalem, he's going to be arrested, he's going to be crucified. And so he begins to talk to them about the treatment that he will receive in Jerusalem and how he's going to be killed. Now, it's hard for the disciples to put these two things together. Now, wait a minute. You just said that you're the Messiah. You agreed with us on that answer. And to be the Messiah, that means you're the king. So it doesn't fit for you to be the king and to be killed before you're even coronated. And that's why Peter rebukes Jesus. Because he does not understand the kind of king that Jesus is to be. He is not the king, the typical king. He is not going to gain his kingdom in the typical manner. It's not going to be by a military overthrow, which seems to be the kind of thing that Peter was looking for. In fact, Peter seems to be looking for that still when on that night that Jesus is arrested. Because there, Peter takes a sword and takes a swipe at the servant of the high priest and cuts off his ear. And Jesus says, no, that's not the kind of king I am. That's not how I gain my kingdom. Rather, he's saying, I gain my kingdom by dying. It's necessary that it be that way. It must be that way. He is a priest king. So he is not just going to be the king because he is the one who has created the world and everything in it. But he is also going to be a king because he is the Redeemer. He is the one who has died for the kingdom. He has died for the citizens of the kingdom in order that they might be his and know him. Peter, of course, rebukes him for this because he's not expecting this kind of a kingdom. He wants a military takeover. That seems to be rather obvious. He wants a different kind of kingdom where Jesus would sit in Jerusalem and rule from there. He's going to sit on the throne of David, and wasn't that in Jerusalem? So it can't be any other way. Jesus then has to rebuke Peter because Peter is looking for a lesser kingship than the one that Jesus is looking for and the one that the Father is giving to him. Jesus had to do his Father's will in seeking a mediatorial kingship. A kingship in which he is the mediator, the one who dies in behalf of his people and gives to them eternal life. It is by his saving grace that he becomes king. In that context, then, is when Jesus sets out the duty that he gives to his disciples in a much more general way, a duty that flows to us as well. When he says there in verse 24, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You see, the path that Jesus takes to his kingship is the path that we take to reign with him. It's the path of death. Death to self. take up your cross daily. Now, the word daily isn't in this particular record of it, but it is found in other places. Take up your cross daily and follow me. That's the path that the Apostle Paul took, isn't it? I want us to look at Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, following our partaking of the sacrament. But that verse is, it's this. I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Why is Jesus king? Because he died to save his people from their sin. Why do we reign with him? Because we take up that same cross. We die with Jesus. We give up self. We deny self. That's something that Jesus had already done, denying himself. But how difficult that is for us to do. In order to take this same path that we find in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. That's the program. That's the program that you and I need to understand. The program of the kingdom, the program that Jesus gave to his disciples to carry out so that when he died and rose again from the dead and ascended into heaven, his work would not stop. But it would be continued on by the 11 and by the church, that early church that was established, and continuing down to us here today. Learn the program of the kingdom from the Messianic King. It's a tough program, isn't it? To deny yourself and to take up the cross daily to follow him. So why should we do it? Well, it's because we are to live in anticipation of the glory of the kingdom of God. We understand who God is, who Jesus is. We understand the glory that is his because he has not only created the world, he is the Redeemer of the world. And so we come then to the transfiguration of Jesus. Now, you notice it says after 6 days, they went up. One of the others says 8 days. No doubt the difference is in the way that you count days. Whereas Matthew seems to be counting full days, the other account indicates the day leading up to it and the day as they come down from it. There were different ways of counting days in the ancient world, and so we should not be surprised at the difference that there is here. But basically, what you have is about a week that Peter had to stew over all of this. Just because Jesus has rebuked him does not mean that Peter really understands everything he ought to understand. Jesus has rebuked him, and no doubt being rebuked in front of the other disciples, it would leave Peter a little shamed and chagrined. But Jesus takes him up on the mountain along with James and John, so that he has these other witnesses with Peter. And there they see Jesus in the glory that is to be given to him. Peter still isn't quite convinced over all of this, is he? Lord, I'll make three shelters here. Three tabernacles, whatever you want to call them. He's still looking at Jesus being on earth, to rule on earth, to stay here on earth, rather than ascending to heaven. He's not looking at Jesus yet as the one who would die and be raised again from the dead. And so Jesus has brought him here so that he might be able to see the glory that would be his. And so Peter was able to see here a much greater glory of Jesus' kingship than anything he would have had he done things the way Peter wanted him to do them. And in his second letter, Peter wrote this in chapter 1. He says, "We did not follow cleverly invented stories." This is verse 16, 2 Peter 1:16. "We did not follow cleverly invented stories when we told you about the power and coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. But we were eyewitnesses of his majesty. For he received honor and glory from God the Father when the voice came to him from the majestic glory saying, 'This is my Son whom I love, with him I am well pleased.'" Peter's referring back to that time of the Transfiguration, isn't he? He makes it clear that he now understands, here's the glory that was to be his, that was to be Christ's. Did this fully convince Peter? Not at this point, no doubt. That's something that's going to come later on. But he saw the glory there. And Jesus, no doubt, was encouraged by the glory of the Transfiguration, knowing what he had to go through and what would follow what he had to go through. But when you come down from the mountain and have the scene in front of you that Jesus and Peter and James and John saw, what a come down it is. A literal come down from the mountain, but a come down in your spirit. From the glory of the mountain to the unbelief that there is and the perverseness, as Jesus calls it, right here at the base of the mountain. The man rushes up to him. And he says, "Teacher, I asked your disciples to cast out this demon from my son, and they couldn't do it." And Jesus' response is, "Oh, unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you?" He's not complaining about the father who has brought his boy, because after all, the father in faith has brought his boy to Jesus and his disciples in order to have his disciples heal his son. He's complaining about his disciples who do not yet understand things as they ought to understand it. The problem was the disciples, and so he calls them unbelieving and perverse. But then he shows his power and his glory. He doesn't calm a storm. He doesn't heal someone with a mere physical malady. He doesn't even raise someone from the dead. Rather, he casts out a demon. He deals with the kingdom of darkness in its most prominent form on earth. And he casts out that demon, reminding them that yes, there is this glory that is to follow. But continue with the program. Understand the kingdom and how it is that you attain the kingdom, and that it's through the cross that you have everlasting life. And so Jesus again asserted his kingship and the kind of kingship that he would have, the kingship that would come by death. When they came together in Galilee, he said to them, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day, he will be raised to life. This is the way of the kingship. And for you to follow me, Jesus says, you've got to deny yourself and take up your cross daily to follow me. It is in our union with the mediatorial King that we reign. As we are united to Him in His death, that we come to have the glory that Jesus has prepared for us. And so we must hold fast to the kingship as He has indicated it. You and I do not need the accolades. Instead, we are to deny ourselves and to boast only in the Lord. It's not that we have to be proved right, but rather that Jesus is to be exalted. The glory of the kingdom is a kingdom that belongs to us by dying. And so he says, if anyone will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me.